Happy are people who are hopeless, because theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
Happy are people who grieve,
because they will be made glad.
Happy are people who are humble,
because they will inherit the earth.
Happy are people who are hungry and thirsty for righteousness,
because they will be fed until they are full.
Happy are people who show mercy,
because they will receive mercy.
Happy are people who have pure hearts,
because God will see them.
Happy are people who make peace,
because they will be called God's children.
Happy are people whose lives are harassed because they are righteous,
because the kingdom of heaven is theirs.
Happy are you when people insult you and harass you and speak all kinds of bad and false things about you, all because of me.
Be full of joy and be glad, because you have a great reward in heaven.
You are the salt of the earth.
But if salt loses its saltness, how will it become salty again?
It's good for nothing except to be thrown away and trampled under people's feet.
You are the light of the world.
And a city on top of a hill can't be hidden.
Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a basket.
Instead, they put it on top of a lampstand, and it shines on all who are in the house.
In the same way, let your light shine before people, so they can see the good things you do and praise your Father who is in heaven.
Amen. That's from Matthew chapter 5. Jesus can say anything after those beatitudes. Blessed are the. Jesus can say anything he wants. Gathered on the hillside are crowds of people who've come from everywhere. The Bible lists their homes. From Jerusalem, Judea, the Decapolis, which is 10 cities scattered throughout Jordan. They've come from across the Jordan River. They're on the hillside, and with them, those first four disciples. They're listening, they're taking notes. There's a rumor. Don't you love a good rumor? Tell the truth, church. Don't you love a good rumor? It's Sabbath. Tell the truth, church. Don't you love a rumor full of good news, though? Because people's bodies are being put back together again. The rumor is that Jesus is making people whole, and the thought is, if he's doing it for them, he'll do it for me. So the people have gathered, and now Jesus has their attention with these sayings we call the Beatitudes, and next comes the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus never called them that. We call them that since about the 4th century. It'll take all of Matthew 5, 6, and 7 for what Jesus needs to teach this day. He can say anything now that he wants, and Jesus reaches for salt and light. Salt and light. You will be salt and light. In Matthew chapter 5, I'm interested by these twin metaphors. After happy are the people who are hopeless, and happy are the people who grieve, and happy are the people who are humble, and happy who are the people that are hungry and thirsty. It's a manifesto Jesus is giving. That's another word we could use for this. It's what his movement will be about. It's what the program's going to look like. It's the platform statement. It's a mission statement, if you will. And be careful. Be careful if you're attracted to these priorities, Jesus says. You'll be persecuted over these priorities. You'll also experience some rewards, the text said. I imagine Jesus takes a breath now. I mean, he can say anything he wants, and he says, so be salt of the earth and light in the world. Be salt and light. And in the original language, which we don't read, it's even more intense. There's an intensive way that it's stated. Don't be saltless salt. Saltless salt. What's saltless salt good for? It's good for nothing. Don't be saltless salt, and don't be invisible light. So Jesus goes farther than saying, be these, salt and light. He says, don't ruin these. That's a different teaching. Don't ruin these, salt and light. Salt. What are you having for lunch today? What are you having for lunch? What are you having for lunch? Do you know what's on the menu in your house? No. Do you know what you're having? Wow, you're frowning. Do you know what you're having in your house? What's on the menu? Salmon? Ooh. I'm vegetarian, and I said, ooh. How good is salmon without salt? Not so great. It's nice if you add a little lime and cilantro and other things, too, I hear. What are you having for lunch today, Millers? Do you know? I mean, Michael came home. Didn't you cook him a meal? What's on the menu? What do you guess? Lentils. Are lentils any good without salt? Oh, my word. I would start eating salmon if I had to eat lentils without salt. Probably not, though. But lentils are not good without salt, right? What are you having, Rebecca, what are you having for lunch today? Do you know? Fish tacos. So you could have a potluck together, you two. You're not having fish tacos without salt. See, Jesus knows, like we know, what salt is good for. Salt for them, salt. It fertilized the soil that grew the food. Salt fueled the fire that cooked the food. Salt preserved that food, some of it, like the fish. And salt also seasoned the top. Can't have saltless salt. It's good for nothing. Just like you can't have invisible light. Invisible light, we learned on Silent Sabbath a couple of weeks ago about the chaos and the loneliness of a lack of light. Can't have a house without light. You can't live in your room without a light. You can't live for them in the courtyard where their rooms were attached and they lived life outside after dark. You can't do any of this without light. Everyone knows, basic, you need salt and you need light. I was remembering this light a few months ago. I thought I was a child the first time I heard this voice. Some of you who are older in the room, you're going to recognize this voice. Listen, it's going to go very quick. Listen to the voice.
I'm Tom Odette from Motel 6, and we'll leave the light on for you.
He's got a real echo, Devo, doesn't he, that Tom Odette? I'm Tom Odette, and we'll what? We'll leave the light on. I thought I was a little tiny girl when they first crafted this slogan. As it turns out, after my research this week, I was probably full grown. In the mid-80s, Tom Odette came up with this slogan. Tom Odette, guy from Alaska, practical guy, but they liked his voice. He was an announcer for NPR. They said, we like your voice. Come do a radio ad for us. He just went off script ad-libbing while the microphone was on. He said, this is Tom Odette. We'll leave the light on for you. And the advertisers went, man, that's good. And for 25 years or more, that's been their advertising slogan. Here's one of their more recent commercials for Motel 6.
Over the past 50 years, the way America travels has changed a lot. But through all that time and all those many changes, there's been the same place to find a comfortable night's rest, Motel 6. Always there with the lowest price of any national chain, so you save more for what you travel for. So no matter how much the journey changes, you'll know there's a light on at the end of it. Motel 6, 50 years, and the light's still on.
The websites, the blogs say, actually, if you've stayed at a Motel 6, you might want the lights off. But Tom Odette says, listen, practical guy from Alaska, I don't need to check in a hotel and have fancy artwork, and I don't need avocado balmy scrub stuff to put all over my body. I'd rather have the money to go buy guacamole. So give me a cheap hotel, he says. And then he added in the interview a few years ago, and by the way, that thing about leaving the lights on, yeah, not so much. You'll have to turn your own lights on when you check in. But it sounded nice, didn't it? He said. Sounds good. Yes, because we know when the lights are left on, someone's waiting for us. There's a welcome we anticipate. The lights on means that we will have a home here. We'll be safe here. Jesus, when he can say anything while the people are gathered on the hillside, the first thing he says, listen, he's got dozens of teachings to give the people now this day. Dozens of things he wants them to learn. And the first thing out of his mouth, salt and light. And we're reminded that Matthew, who's the first disciple here in this story, is also the storyteller. Matthew can say whatever he wants to say. He does what many storytellers and ancient autobiographers and ancient historiographers, what they all do, they determine the priority and the way they want the story told. Matthew, first thing out of Jesus' mouth is salt and light, salt and light. You know, salt and light, it makes me think, as if Jesus has just said, the Beatitudes, blessed are the poor and the weak and those who are hungry and those who turn up in my kingdom, blessed are they. And if they turn up, the first thing they might need is a welcome. I take the Beatitudes less, become like this, poor and lonely and meek and hungry. I take it to mean less, become like that, and I hear it more as, be ready for this. Because when the priorities of Jesus are understood, the people will turn up. And when they turn up, they're going to need a welcome. This manifesto of Jesus, one thing we know about the way people eat and what happens when we set tables is that we can learn a lot about their society and their culture and their relationships. Anthropologists tell us if we watch the way people eat and with whom they eat and how they eat, we can know just about everything we need to know about the relationships in these cultures. Watching the way people eat, with whom people eat. So it is. It seems to me Jesus is saying, get the salt, get the light, and set a table. Several hundred years before Jesus, the philosopher Aristotle, he says this. He says, to have eaten a bushel of salt together, that is to be old friends. Demosthenes, who lived, don't you love these names? Demosthenes. How would you like to enroll in the university and have to spell that name? Demosthenes lives about the same time as Aristotle. He's known to have said, where's the salt? Where's the table? It's a synonym. If you find the salt, you found the table. If you find the salt, you found your friends. Plutarch, he lives a few decades after Jesus. He says, the ones around the salt and the beans, the ones around the salt and the lentils, they are his friends. So it is when the salt and the light come and the table is set that the boundaries begin to disappear. The boundaries between the host and the guest, all the status begins to disappear when we sit at a table and we eat the meal. There have been some meals in La Sierra this week. Anybody here from the junior-senior banquet at La Sierra Academy? Where are you? There you go. Does that look familiar? That was this week, right? Y'all survived to talk about it. Any new relationships because you had your banquet, by the way? Aren't you curious, church? I mean, if the salt and the light break down the barriers and relationships are formed, that was a table this week in our community. Here's another table. Tomorrow, the La Sierra Academy tea, the ladies' tea. You see the tables in the background of this picture? Tomorrow, there'll be tables all over the Zipporah School of Business. It's a fundraiser, right? We're raising money for air conditioning at the gym, because the gym needs air conditioning at the school. So write a check, please. Are these the kinds of meals Matthew is talking about? These kinds of meals for social purposes or meals for some other motive? Are these the kinds of meals Jesus is talking about? Be the salt and the light. Set a table. Now, I'll tell you in honesty, this passage was assigned to me a few months ago to study for the One Project in San Diego. Some of us were there. Beautiful 2 days together where we took seriously the Sermon on the Mount. And my friends from that leadership team gave me this text to study and to speak about. And I was so underwhelmed when they assigned me this passage. Like, give me something good to talk about. Originally, I had the Love Your Enemies text. I was so excited about that. Working on a sermon, and then I got salt and light. I'm like, man, who wants salt and light? Who hasn't heard a sermon on salt? Who hasn't seen the story with the children where there's a big bowl of bread dough, and if there's no salt in it, what's wrong? It's no good. And if there's too much salt in it, no good. The moral of the story is, I guess, be salt and be enough salt so that the dough is good, but don't be too much salt so that the dough is bad. I was so underwhelmed with this teaching of Jesus. I wanted something more interesting than salt and light. What's the moral of this story? I've grown up in the church. I'm assuming many of you also know this teaching from Jesus. Be enough salt in the world, but not too much salt in the world. Be the right kind of seasoning or salt in the world so that we don't put other people out. Don't be saltless salt, lightless light. What should we do with this teaching? I'm going to tell you honestly, the way I've heard this being raised in the church is that there is the gospel, and then there are some salt of the earth people, which is you all who follow after Jesus. It's all of us. There's the gospel, and then there's salt of the earth people, and the formula there is then we get a better gospel. Gospel plus salt of the earth people equals a better gospel. That's how I've always understood this text. But that doesn't make sense at the beginning of the teaching of Jesus sitting on the side of the mountain when he's just said, blessed are the poor and the hungry and the lonely and the weak, and blessed are you if you make room for them. It doesn't make sense to think gospel plus a few good people makes a better gospel. In fact, any reading of this passage that elevates us can't be accurate. Any reading of this passage that gives priority to Christians is going to be a problem. The more we think about it, we have some unlearning to do, perhaps, as Adventist Christians. I believe that any reading that elevates us as custodians of Jesus is wrong, because this is not about status. This is not about status in God's kingdom. It's about function. It's about though there's one status in God's kingdom, and it's the gospel. It's the goodness of God's love, who's unending. God's love is unending, unexplainable, unimaginable. That's the gospel. It's more than we can describe. It's more than we can describe. And what God needs are people who care about that gospel and who will be active in the world, but it doesn't make us special or different or better. In other words, the teaching isn't so that we'll feel good about ourselves in the world. It's so that the world will know they are special to God. That before this story is over, everyone matters to God. The goodness of the gospel. What I'm saying this morning, especially if you're an Adventist Christian and you've been raised in the church, it begins to sound a little disturbing, and it can rock us a little from our identity in the world. What if this text means we have an Adventist seasoning salt we're supposed to be distributing in the world? What if it means that? We have to come back to the text and read it again. Here's a headline that helps us a little from January. This is a headline from Christianity Today. And because Ben Carson has been in the news a lot, Seventh-day Adventist Christians have been in the news a little more. The Season of Adventists, the title of the article. Can Ben Carson's church stay separatists amid the booming growth they're experiencing? Because Adventist Christians have grown 1 million more members this year all around the world. We're the fifth largest faith community in the world. Did you know that? Isn't that something? Sitting on this little corner here in Riverside, we're part of a worldwide church that's the fifth largest faith community in the world. The person writing the article wonders, however, with that kind of growth, can you hang on to your separatist values? That is, being in the world but not of the world. That is, knowing what your unique and what your special mission is and why that's important. Is it possible for you to remain special? The author of this article asks, and I just want to say clearly this morning, if our priority as Adventist Christians is remaining separate and special, we need a better headline. Are you okay? Do you agree with that? We need a better headline? Now, hear clearly this morning, church, because all summer we're going to talk about why is it important what we think we believe and why we trust a certain idea about God. What's important about that? All summer we'll talk about this. It's good for us to know that when this church was born in the middle of the 19th century, that things were happening in the world, this great second spiritual awakening, we were not the only church, the only group of people who grabbed for Daniel and Revelation to help understand what was going on in the world. There were child preachers in Northern Europe. Did you know that? Little tiny children who stood up on a box and they preached Daniel and Revelation with the rest of us. because something was going on in the world. People believed the world was coming to an end. There's a reason we reached for Daniel in Revelation, and there's a reason we began to call ourselves a remnant church. Remnant is a word in the Bible that's used a lot of times. Remnant means the remaining ones, the ones we hope will remain faithful as the story goes on and on and on. We got to know, though, that the word remnant and the experience of the remnant, it deteriorates again and again. The remnant experiences chaos and confusion. The remnant in these Bible stories, they deteriorate. The remnant, they have war inside. They have war coming to them from the outside. And finally, we get to the end of the book of Revelation, and there's a small remnant that remains. But do you know why they remain? And do you know what causes the others to deteriorate? Remnant groups always deteriorate when they set priorities according to themselves. And remnants thrive when their priority is Jesus. In Revelation 14, it says, "Blessed are those, thou the remnant, who remain faithful to the commandments and faithful to Jesus." If we're going to remain faithful to Jesus, then we have to cherish what Jesus cherishes. So we haven't heard anything yet in the gospel about the Sabbath and the second coming and all these things that matter to us. But first, what we heard was, be salt and light. Have a presence and a hospitality and a warmth in the world, because the people are going to turn up. And when they turn up, they're not going to ask us what we believe. They're going to ask us if they're welcome here. Be salt and light. This is what Jesus cherishes. The author, Robin Myers, I like it the way he says this. Christianity then is presence, not proof. Christianity first is presence, not proof. And for those of you who've been living a long time inside of Adventist Christianity, my little mind goes to work on this present truth people, what it means to believe there's truth today and more truth tomorrow and more truth the next day, that the truth is always on the move. We've cared greatly about the truth, but we have a passage today that's asking us to be present. Present truth. Proximity. Sit in the space with other people. You know what meals do? They put us shoulder to shoulder with other people. At a meal, we have to sit close together. At a meal, we have to talk to each other. At a meal, we have to care like one another matters. At a meal, the barriers come down and we begin to be real. Today is a food frenzy day for the university students. That's good news. That means students go home and have a wonderful meal with lovely people. Here are some images of food frenzy. I want you to notice the progression in these meals from people. Look at this first shot, where all the students are like as far away as they can get from the camera, right? It's like when people come up to the platform and they stand all the way back here. That happens a lot. They'll come up here, but they don't want to stand out there where you are. Now watch the next picture of the food frenzy meal. They move from kind of back there to they get their plate and they sit around a table and people start smiling and they talk. And these are all students. I don't see any adults yet in the picture, any hosts yet. Keep going. And you sit together and you get a little crazy and real, right? And you sit together a little bit longer. And you get real crazy and you get real real. And now the adults are in the picture and we're staying till late in the day. This is our second year of doing these meals a few times on Sabbath. Here's one thing we've learned, that we open the doors, and sometimes you students, you stay all day. Like you're ready. I keep telling the host, they're ready for supper. If you invite them for lunch, be ready for supper, because it's likely going to happen, right? Isn't it beautiful, students, to be in the homes of church members who don't know you, and they cooked for you? Here's a list of some of the names. Today we're thanking them since this is your last meal. These are some of the names of the lovely people who have opened their doors, they've put out the salt and the light, and they've said, you're welcome to sit here and be at our table. It's beautiful. If you put the table out and people come and you sit down and you begin to do life together, the relationships begin to change. The boundaries begin to change. This matters tremendously because Jesus is about ready to tell them some of the most difficult things they're going to hear. Jesus is going to take old commandments and say, but the new application is this. You heard this, but now I'm telling you that. Jesus is going to say, you'll have to love everybody. I mean everybody. There'll be no enemies. You'll have to turn the other cheek. He's going to say, forgive until you can't forgive any longer. In other words, what Jesus is going to teach them, they're not capable of. We're not capable of. But I get the idea from Matthew, get the salt, grab the light, because if we sit around a table, maybe some of these ethical behaviors can begin to take shape. Try eating a meal with someone you hate. That's all. Have you done that? Try eating a meal with someone we can't forgive. Try eating a meal with someone who, you know that person. Just think of that person. Jesus says, set a table. Maybe it's in the process of setting the table and sitting together then that these ethics can be shaped, that we can allow the space for the conversation and the shifting that needs to have happen. See, my conviction is at the end of the day, the meal's as much for me as it is for the other. That before the story is over, I'm the poor, I'm the weak, I'm the deserted, I'm the abandoned, I'm the one God came for. And the people who sit around my table enrich me. That, in fact, at the end, it's a supper of siblings around this table. And it challenges everything about the way we think we want to do church. A few years ago, some of you were here. Maybe if you're a senior, any seniors in the room and any older peoples in the room? 2011, we had this idea. We called it 555. We were talking about the miracle story of Jesus sitting on the mountainside feeding people with, you know, a fish and a loaves and all the baskets of leftover, and everyone ate until they were satisfied. We repeated the sermon, the story, for several weeks in a row. 555, we called it. 5 weeks, 5 meals, 5 new people. The challenge was set a table. Have some new people around your table. Make them people you don't already know. Let's try this for 5 weeks and let's see what happens. We even said to the younger ones in the crowd, you don't have money to invite somebody, you can't even do In-N-Out or Del Taco here. And we passed out several $100 worth of gift certificates in the congregation. Any of you get any of those? You remember this? This happened a few years back now. I remember passing out a whole bunch of Del Taco, especially saying to students, this is not for your belly alone. Remember, 555. Invite somebody, go, have a meal. It's a great idea. Week by week went by, and week by week, some of us tried it. By the time we got to the end, though, I was particularly interested in a group of students I talked to who said, you know, on the first week, I just kind of stood here because I thought, this is great, I'm going to get invited home for lunch today. Didn't happen. It's okay, it's just 1 week of 5. I'm going to come back next week. So next week he sits a little closer. This is great. I'm going to get invited home for lunch today. 555. Didn't happen. Third week, fourth week, fifth week. What we learned is that we loved being that church that thought this was a good idea. We loved being the church that values this. We're going to eat together. We're going to sit together with people we don't know. We're going to grow ourselves. We loved that idea, but very few of us were able to do it because it challenges us. We want to eat our salmon today with the people we know and love. I want those fish tacos where I can enjoy them. I don't want the nerves of people around my table I don't know and I don't like. And oh my goodness, their theology is whack. I'm not even going to be able to eat. I'm going to be so upset. I have to go to lunch with them. See, it challenges us at this most basic level. When Jesus says, get the salt and the light, I think it's brilliant. He asks us to do something that will interrupt and disrupt all of this. Get the salt and the light. And I know today we like church organized like this. We like the beautiful building, whether it's the stained glass and the organ, or it's the band and sort of the stainless steel and the retro tech-driven IKEA on steroids. Go glam church. Church glam. Right? Farm-to-table, vegan potlucks, whatever it is. We like all this stuff now. We want a nice church. We don't want to be disrupted with all of this. And the truth is, this disrupts us when we open the doors and we set tables that impact all of the 92505. So we're studying this, and on the day I was talking about this with my colleague here, Steve Hemenway, Director of Finance, who looks out for these beautiful buildings, he said, you know, it's ironic because today I chased a group of guys off the steps. Chapel was happening in the church, and there was a group of scary-looking guys who decided to make the parking lot their home and sit on the steps of this old, ugly building. It's not ours. We would like it, but that old, ugly building, they decided to sort of make their hangout, and some gang members, and they were not up to anything good, and Steve had to ask them to leave, and the same day, that very same day, someone broke into another building here, broke through a window, was looking for something to steal. On that same day, a group of teenagers were up in the office complex. Get this, they push the office doors open, they get their skateboards, they go up a couple of levels. They think it'd be a great idea if they get a running start with their skateboards, and they run and jump off the steps inside the office, land on their skateboards, go down one flight of stairs, go down a second flight of stairs out into the middle of the street. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that beautiful? Steve's like, guys. See, that's what's going on in the neighborhood, and we get teachings like this, and it's, if I have to invite these people to my table, it disrupts a lot of things. If these will be the people sitting in church with us next week, I don't know about this teaching. It gets real. This teaching changes me. Get the salt, Jesus says. Grab the light, Jesus says. So we have this friend Mike around here. Some of you know. Mike goes back a lot of years now. This is Mike from the backside, roaming around the cafeteria, the cafe area. This is Mike on a rather groomed day, but we got Mike like this a lot of days too. Mike lived with us for, 15 years or more. Mike moved around with us on the weekends here, but he actually lived on Hole Street. He slept on Hole Avenue. I tried several times. I went down to meet Mike close to his home where he slept outside. We were going to do a video. I was going to ask him some questions. I was curious about his life because he kept coming back to church and he knew you by name. And there was one Sabbath school class in particular in the morning that he knew all of those people who met in a room down here. He knew them by name. And I was curious about Mike's life. He worked in a manufacturing plant in Corona, and when he lost his job, he lost everything a few years back. And he tried living with some people, and it didn't work out so well for him. People tried to give him a bed, and you'd find him gone, and after a night or two, he just really would rather live on Hole Avenue, wrapped up in a sleeping bag. I'd go down there and try take the video camera and interview Mike, and he wouldn't show up on those days when the camera was on, but you know where he showed up? Right here, every Sabbath, Sabbath after Sabbath after Sabbath. Mike set up chairs and tables for our Sabbath school classes, 10, 15 years. For that, Mike was given $20. That was not my big idea. That goes back a while. Pastor Brad Whited decided that was worthwhile. Somebody needs to set up tables and chairs around here. We don't like to do that. Telling you the truth. I don't like to do that. So Pastor Brad would give Mike $20. Mike would show up. You would think he'd take his $20 and go. Many of these days, Mike shows up, you know, he's not clean, and we know what he's been drinking the night before, and he would take to wearing his dark glasses because he needed to keep his eyes covered. Mike's just kind of a mess, but he'd keep showing up every Sabbath, seventh day Sabbath. He would actually stay for Sabbath school, and then he'd come into church. I'd go outside and greet Mike in the morning. He'd give me a big old wet kiss right here on the cheek. And he'd call me Chrissy. Hi, Chrissy. Hi, Mike. I mean, you're not getting around a hug and a kiss from Mike. And he'd say to me, good sermon, Chrissy. Because he took his $20, but he didn't go home. He sat here. He sat right back there in the rear on that ledge in front of the parents' room. And he took all of this in year after year after year. Good sermon, Chrissy. Even if I wasn't preaching. He would tell me that every week. Good sermon, Chrissy, because he's figured out I'm the one up here, right? Good sermon, Chrissy. Mike died a couple of years ago. You know where he died? Right here. probably a cardiac incident right out here on the patio. He collapsed on a Sabbath morning when he was setting up the cafe for us. And he collapsed, and the paramedics came, and he was gone. I think it's rather beautiful. He died here. It's the community that meant the most to him, I do believe. You know what we learned a few years ago? Mike had a key to the church. Mike, who slept on Hull Avenue, who knew all the homeless in Riverside by name. If there was an incident, if somebody was in trouble, Mike could tell you the stories. A woman who got attacked, another one who ended up at the community hospital, Mike could tell you all their stories. Mike had a key to our church, this church with a stained glass and a $3 million organ. Mike had a key to the church with a $600,000 a year budget. Mike, homeless Mike, sleeping on Hull Avenue, could get into this church across the way anytime he wanted. A few times we'd come and see him sleeping in the fellowship hall when it was wet and cold outside. That's pretty good. You want a better headline, church? How about this? Adventist churches open all their facilities to the homeless. You want a better headline? See, the pastors, we're getting ready to talk about this. We have some strategic and visioning work. That big old ugly outpost building, it's coming down. It's time for us to dream about the next thing. What's the next experience for us in the 92505? And we hear the words of Jesus, get the salt, get the light, which I take to mean you better not build anything that's for Adventists only. Because we got to have a presence in this world. No one else is going to come to our corner. Want a better headline? There's one. Grab the salt and the light, Jesus says. Can you imagine these tables? Imagine the variety of tables, please, as this team sings for us.
Table of the Lord. I will feast at the table of the Lord, and I won't hunger anymore at His table. I will feast at the table. Joy will fill.
Invited to the table. I don't know all of the applications this morning. This is what will happen now for several weeks here in our church as we explore what does it mean when someone can only bring in and out hamburgers to the table? What does it mean? I remember we hosted Bible study group for years. Kirby, do you remember when we were young adults? We had no money and we were hosting people who could never bring anything to the table. They'd show up with like a half a can of creamed corn. Like, what do we look like? Like, we can feed you all? We can't feed you all. You get the salt, you turn on the lights, and you see what the Spirit can do, friends. So grab that salt, get that light, and let's start setting tables here. Today, I invite you to go in the generosity of the salt and the light, which is God. Give our fears to the Spirit, who is capable of sending them far away. And go with confidence in our teacher Jesus. This is what the kingdom looks like. Amen. Amen.